I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show, but let's dive into another Woo Biz Chat. Woo Biz Chat is sponsored by OmniSend. OmniSend is a solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops or your own website while saving time with pre-built automation that drives sales. I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show, but let's dive into another Woo Biz Chat.
So hello, Woo Builders, and welcome back to another episode of Do the Woo, the podcast where we dive into all things WooCommerce, community, and the future of work. I'm Emma, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Adam. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Miss Emma. It is nice to see your face, although no one else can. Bob and I still can't get him to make this a video podcast, but probably for the best. But it's so great to see you. I'm excited about today's episode. We're going to be discussing something that every online business owner should have on their radar: website policies and why they matter. We've got a special guest with us today. Through all of the legal must-haves for WooCommerce stores, but we'll introduce her. Let me ask you, Emma, how often do people actually read those terms and conditions on websites? Is that something you do regularly?
No, not nearly enough.
Read all of them.
But actually, recently, I have read too many of them. Like, I think I've read every single one on every single website. But so now I'm on kind of like that side of it, thinking, I used to be one of those people like, oh, maybe they should read them, maybe they shouldn't. But now I'm very much like, people should have clear and up-to-date terms and privacies and policies, and it's super critical. And because I can see the benefit to protecting both your business, their customers, so today what we're going to be doing is diving into the world of website policies. These can be from terms and conditions to privacy policies. I feel like I've just said policies a lot. That word. But learning why they are super important and more important now more than ever in the current digital landscape.
Oh, absolutely. And today we're thrilled to have Donata Stroink-Skillrud. Did I say that correctly? Did I get close?
Yeah, close enough.
Close enough. Stroink-Skillrud. Ah, you're the president of Termageddon. This is an exciting time. We are super grateful to have you on to help us make sense of all of this. We know that you're going to give us all the legal advice, right? Legal advice? Wait, no. That was the opposite of what I was supposed to say. This is not legal advice, but you're going to set us straight. You're going to help us get this figured out, making sure that we are staying up to date with all of the changes in legislation. And that's what we do here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me here.
So maybe you can start off by telling us and the listeners a little bit about yourself and actually how you maybe got into this field.
Sure. So I'm an attorney licensed in Illinois and a certified information privacy professional. I'm the president and legal engineer of Termageddon. So we've generated tens of thousands of policies and kept them up to date with changing legislation. I'm the American Bar Association's e-privacy committee chair. I'm a member of the ABA Cybersecurity Legal Task Force, a fellow at the American Bar Foundation, and I'm also the ABA's representative to the United Nations. So the reason why I got into this is I was in private practice. So I used to work at an agency, and after the agency was bought out, I was in private practice and had clients asking me, like, what should I do for a privacy policy or terms of service? And this was before all of these new privacy laws, before everything was very complicated. And I had to ask them very similar questions, like, what are you doing with this data? Do you share it? Do you sell it? Things like that. And then I had like 10 templates that I would Frankenstein together into one document. And the process was really, really terrible. And I absolutely hated it. And I thought, hey, there's got to be a way to automate this. And at the time, I was dating a person who's not my husband. And we were talking about this at dinner. And he worked at an agency. And he's like, yeah, all these clients ask me, like, what do I do for a privacy policy? And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Like, go ask somebody else. Or they would like take a template or like ask him to copy and paste somebody else's privacy policy. And he's like, I'm not really comfortable with this. So we kind of melded those problems together and came up with the solution of Termageddon.
So what you're saying is you are exactly the right person for us to talk to about this topic.
Yes.
There's nobody that I can think of that understands this stuff better. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like you needed a mic drop after listing off your credentials. If for those of you guys can't see our faces, but Adam and I, like, our jaws dropped. We were like, what? So amazing. Yeah.
That is fantastic. Very, very cool. So I think one of the things that I am curious about is what's at stake here? Like, if someone gets this wrong, if you're setting up a Woo website, you're setting up a WooCommerce site, and you just don't put anything in there. You don't have any legal documentation. Yeah, I put a website. I've got my stuff. What's for sale? What's at stake?
So I guess first thing that I would want to say is, are you collecting personal information, right? That's when these privacy laws come into play. So from a privacy perspective, you know, let's say you have a contact form, you have the e-commerce forms, you have email newsletter subscriptions, you have, let's say, analytics or the Metapixel or something like that. That's when privacy issues come into play. So the first thing from a privacy perspective is you have fines. So those start at $2,500 per website visitor. So let's say I have 100 website visitors from California and I don't get their consent for tracking or I don't give them an appropriate privacy policy. That fine is $2,500 times 100. From a privacy perspective, you also have lawsuits. So right now, the California Invasion of Privacy Act, super old privacy law, has become very popular. So businesses have been getting sued for tracking people through Metapixel without their consent in California. And those lawsuits are very expensive. So businesses are getting demand letters from $30,000 to, you know, $60,000 or anywhere in between for violations with that. When it comes to the terms of service, I think a lot of people aren't aware of certain laws. So for example, there's a California automated subscription law. So if I have subscriptions that automatically renew, but I don't present the consumer with certain information, my terms of service, the things that they got through the subscription are actually considered a gift. So let's say I'm selling subscription magazine. All the magazines that I sent them is a gift, and now I have to refund them all of their money.
Oh, right? Oh no.
yeah. Or, you know, if you don't limit your liability or you don't limit damages or you offer warranties that you're not actually offering, you know, you may be required to offer refunds or compensation to a consumer. So these things can get very, very expensive. And then from the other side of things, we're seeing how privacy and providing transparent information to consumers can be a competitive advantage. So more and more consumers are willing to leave websites, not provide them with their personal information, or not buy from them, or switch to a different provider if they feel like their privacy has been violated, or they're not getting transparent information. So all of this stuff can be a competitive advantage to businesses as well.
Got it.
I feel like I'm just super scared. Like, I need to go to my personal site and just, like, put every single policy on there.
Sorry, that's not my intention to scare people. I'm just trying to provide, like, general information that I think most businesses don't think about, right? Like, as a business, there's so many things you need to pay attention to. This is something that people tend to put off for as long as they can. It's unfortunately just not the world that we live in anymore.
I was super excited to have you on because I was setting up a personal site and I was trying to research, like, which ones I need and which ones I don't need. Can I combine any of these things together? And there was actually not a lot of information about this. So I was, like, super excited to have you on so that I can just kind of, like, from a first person experience, ask you some questions. But you did mention specifically California. So do laws change state by state in the states? And are there different ones for every single country? Or do you have to create new policies for any, if you have international clients or customers?
Yeah. So in the United States, we have a huge problem, which is we call the state privacy law patchwork. And it's the bane of every privacy lawyer's existence. It's the fact that in the U.S., we don't have a comprehensive federal privacy law. So we do have privacy laws for healthcare information or children's information or financial information, but nothing federally that covers information commonly collected through websites like names, emails, phone numbers, IP addresses. And that's why you're seeing each state propose and pass their own privacy laws. So for example, like California has three laws that we currently need to pay attention to. So states have different laws and they may have multiple laws, and they do change and update those laws as technology changes and as privacy infringements change as well. And the issue with this is that the laws don't just apply to businesses that are located in the state of California, for example. So let's say I'm a business in Illinois and I have a contact form where people from California could submit their name and email. I would be subject to the California Online Privacy and Protection Act of 2003 because I'm collecting the data of residents of California, even though I'm not located there. Same thing with other countries, right? GDPR can apply to businesses outside of the EU. The UK Data Protection Act can apply to businesses outside of the UK. And that's what makes this very, very complicated in the sense that it's not just where your business is located, it's where your customers are located, where you're offering goods or services, who you're tracking online, things like that. And most privacy laws don't care about the size of your business. So it doesn't matter what revenue amount you have, how many people's data you're collecting, how many employees you have, any of that kind of thing. There's privacy laws that can even apply to nonprofits. So some laws do have exemptions, like they're for-profit businesses only. Other laws don't. Some laws apply to larger businesses. Some laws apply to smaller businesses as well. It's kind of this crazy patchwork that is hard to navigate.
Wow. It's so interesting. There's so many different pitfalls. And I like how you said it. We're not here to scare you. I think it's to inform about what you need to do to get this right, to get this correct. And so, yeah, a couple of questions that I want to sort of break down by maybe priority. On your website, let's say you're getting your website to go, you're selling something, you're building a website for someone that is selling t-shirts, you know, for instance. As you are putting together that website, you've designed a beautiful site, you've got the store, everything going, from these different types of legal aspects of that, could you walk us through a priority list of, okay, first make sure, do this first, do this second. Is there something you can walk us through in our t-shirt store example?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that you should really do is determine what amount of data you actually need to collect. So for example, let's say I have a contact form that has name, email, and phone number. And let's say I never intend to call this person. I'm only going to respond to contact forms via email. I shouldn't be collecting that phone number because I'm never going to call them anyway, right? So reduce the amount of data that you're actually collecting. Second thing, or I guess part of the first thing you should think about is, what about all these third-party tracking tools that I have on the site? So let's say I decide, okay, I'm going to have Google Analytics. I would definitely encourage you to really take the time and understand whether or not you're actually going to use this analytics data. I would definitely encourage people to stop installing tools just because they may need them in the future, because these tools can subject you to additional privacy laws and increase your risk. So let's say you want Google Analytics, but you never intend to look at that data, don't have it. Or you want to have analytics and you need it for some reason, try to find a more privacy-focused tool, a different analytics tool that collects less data or tracks people less. The second thing that I think people should really think about is figure out what privacy laws apply to you. Because without knowing what privacy laws apply to you, you won't know what standards you have to meet. So for example, some laws require explicit consent to be provided prior to them being tracked, and other laws don't. So understanding which laws apply to you is going to dictate what you need to do next. The third thing that you need to think about is obtaining consent. So whether that's through a cookie consent banner or, you know, having checkboxes on your form, having people agree to your policies and things like that. And then you should also think about the policies that you're going to have on your site, like your privacy policy, terms of service, cookie policy, and how you're going to keep those things up to date. So those are probably the first couple steps that I would take. Obviously, there's more steps that you're going to have to take, like figuring out what privacy rights you provide and to who and how to respond to privacy rights requests and things like that. But just to start, that's probably where I would start.
That's our hierarchy of what's most important. I'm taking notes. If everyone at home, take notes.
I am too. I'm like actively typing while you're talking. Okay, so is there an easy way to figure out, like, I think like the first part that you said, determining the amount of data that you need to collect. I liked your example. If you don't need the phone number, why even say it and ask for it? But how would you figure out which privacy laws apply to you? What's the kind of like a workflow for that?
So there's a couple ways to do that. So the first way would be to hire a privacy attorney who can help walk you through those steps. That can get kind of expensive, but they would be able to give you an exact list of what you need to comply with and how. The second way to do that would be to look up a list of laws and then read them. And then, you know, in the law, they will say this is who this applies to. We also have a blog post actually about this. So if you go to termageddon.com and look at our blog and search what laws require websites to have a privacy policy, we do have a blog that just breaks down those requirements as well. And we also have that included in our privacy policy generator too.
Awesome. As you're building this fantastic t-shirt website and you're thinking about where these policies and terms and, for lack of a better term, the legalese that we're discussing, is there anything that regulates how visible they are? Like, is there something that says where they need to be or at what point you need to consent to cookies or things like that? How does visibility and people being able to find these different terms, how does that play into it?
So the main standard is that these policies have to be conspicuous on your website. That means easily visible, not hidden, and easily accessible. Usually how that's done is through a link in the footer of the website. So the policies cannot be combined together. So multiple privacy laws do prohibit the coupling of a privacy policy and a terms of service. The privacy policy needs to say privacy. So if you just have a link that says legal, that's usually not compliant with most privacy laws. So what we usually recommend is on the footer, you have links, privacy policy, terms of service, cookie policy, whatever else you have. And those are all separated. They need to be in contrasting text as compared to the color of the footer. So if your footer is a dark gray and your policy links are a slightly lighter gray, that's not going to be compliant. So you want to make sure you keep accessibility standards in mind there. And then make sure that those links are available on every page of the site. Usually that's done on the footer. And then when you click on that link, it needs to open the actual document. So, you know, as somebody who looks at websites pretty frequently, looks at privacy policies, you have a link to the privacy policy and then you click on it, it leads to a 404 page. That's not going to be compliant. It needs to lead to an actual privacy policy. So that's in terms of the policies themselves. In terms of the cookie consent banner, you want that to come up whenever somebody visits the website, especially for the first time. If you are tracking people, you want to make sure that's easily visible as well, and it gives users an actual choice. So it needs to have an accept and a decline button, and both of them need to be given equal prominence. So let's say you have an accept button that's green and a reject button that's red. That's going to be considered a dark pattern because it does nudge people into accepting cookies and tricks them into getting tracked where they normally wouldn't be. Or let's say the accept is a big button and reject is tiny, or it says accept or more information. You know, you want to have actual accept and decline, and they need to be given equal prominence as well.
Got it. That makes sense.
That's so interesting. Yeah, like it does make so much sense, but you would never think about that. About all of these little things. What about when they have like multiple options, not just this cut and dry?
Customize.
Yeah, like customizer, the essential only. Is that just a gray area or is that like okay for everything?
So in terms of the cookie consent banner, you do need to have an accept and a reject button. But if you have like accept necessary only, that's fine because necessary cookies can actually be enabled without user consent because they're necessary to the operation of the website. So you could have little toggles that say, okay, I want only functional cookies and not marketing, or I want marketing but not functional. But what's important here is that these cookies are classified correctly. So an essential cookie is a cookie that is necessary to the operation of the website. Without that cookie, the website would not work. What a lot of business owners do is say, well, Google Analytics is essential to my business because it's essential to me that I get analytics You laugh, but that's how people think. You know,
it's essentially important.
But that's how people think. But like that stuff doesn't apply. You can't just say, oh, it's essential. No, it isn't. Google Analytics is a marketing cookie. The Metapixel is a marketing cookie. These are not essential cookies. So make sure that those are classified correctly as well and provide users with information as to what these cookies actually are. So have a cookie policy that says, okay, these are the marketing cookies that we have. These are the essential. These are the functional ones that we have. So people can make an actual choice as to what they're agreeing to.
So what about like if you don't provide it?
I don't want
to. It's not essential to me. No, I'm just kidding. No, but like if there's a time frame that you have, or does it need to be like live the second your site or your t-shirt business is live? And what about on the second part of that is if they're incorrect and like you just need an update, is there like a warning or I don't know, privacy policy police?
So privacy laws do start applying as soon as personal information is being collected. So let's say you launch the website, you have the forms, you have the analytics, you have the advertising. You do need to have this privacy stuff in place before that launch. Now, I do live in the real world and understand that most businesses may not have that the moment they launch or may not have the resources to set this up the moment they launch. It's up to you to kind of determine your level of risk. You know, if you launch today, there might not be anybody visiting your website or submitting their personal information, right? So, I mean, you can choose to roll the dice if something happens, you know, then it's on you. But I do want to note that there are affordable ways to get this done as well, especially for small businesses too. But it does start applying as soon as personal information is being collected. So if you don't have this currently in place, I would recommend getting this in place as soon as possible, just because of the amount of lawsuits being filed right now and the amount of fines being issued. You know, it's something that you don't want to delay if you can. Now, in terms of violations, is there a privacy policy police? It depends, right? So you have state attorney generals who enforce privacy laws in the United States, as well as the Federal Trade Commission. In the EU, you have the data protection authorities. In the UK, you have the Information Commissioner's Office. Canada has something similar as well. Some states are actually forming specific entities just to enforce privacy laws. So when you look at a state attorney general's office, they're responsible for enforcing a lot of things. So for example, like consumer protection and consumer safety laws. So they may not have all of the time and resources to prosecute these types of violations. So they're forming separate groups within the office who are giving those resources and those employees to specifically enforce privacy laws. Now, some laws do have a grace period. So when a law is first passed, after it goes into effect, you may have 6 months where they will just let you know via a nicely worded letter, hey, fix your stuff. This is not compliant. So they may offer a grace period at the beginning, but then eventually that grace period expires. And then, you know, they just go after you as regular. Now, when it comes to actual enforcement actions, when somebody starts an enforcement action against you, you may be able to work with them and say, hey, here's all the things that I fixed. Please don't find me. Sometimes that works. Sometimes that doesn't.
The little love the privacy police.
This is scary encouragement.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org.
All right, so we've talked about the privacy, especially as you start, so as I'm thinking about this, as you start collecting any data, you need to let people know what's happening with that data. So that's the cookies, the consent. If you have a form on your page, you know what you're going to do with that. When it comes to selling something, is there additional legal information that you need to have on your site to cover yourself as far as trade and commerce?
Yeah. So in that case, this is where you'd want to think about the terms of service. So just to be clear, terms of service, those are the rules to using your website. So there's kind of two aspects to it. The first aspect is the commerce aspect. The second aspect is for websites that may not even have e-commerce. So really, terms of service is recommended for any business because it helps you protect your business, limit your liability, limit your damages, protect your intellectual property, things like that. So for example, let's say I'm a business that doesn't do e-commerce, but allow comments on the website. I can let people know what types of comments are not allowed or will be taken down. When it comes to the e-commerce side of things, you do want to think about subscriptions because of those subscription laws that we talked about previously. And then you also want to talk about international terms. So for example, there are international terms that will apply by default unless I specifically disclaim them. So like the UN Convention of Contracts or Incoterms or the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, those can apply regardless of what you actually say to the customer unless you specifically disclaim them. So those are not very advantageous to a business. So let's say I am selling internationally and I don't offer refunds, but I don't specifically disclaim Incoterms. Now, what happens here is that these terms will apply by default. So if I don't offer refunds, I may actually be required to provide a refund to a customer, even though I don't offer it because I didn't specifically disclaim these items. So those are the small things that you would want to think about within the terms of service, as well as, you know, informing people about questions that they have. So, you know, I'm a regular consumer in my day-to-day life. Let's say I want to buy shoes online. One of my really annoying things with shoes is I know my shoe size, but then they come in and all of a sudden it doesn't fit. So when I'm buying shoes, I'm only going to look for companies that offer me a refund and returns because I know I'm going to have to return like 50% of the shoes that I buy because they're not going to fit. Well, if the website has a terms of service, I read that terms of service, see, okay, they offer refunds and returns. Great, I can continue. If they don't offer the terms of service or they don't give that information to me, I'm going to go somewhere else. Like, I'm not going to spend a day contacting them, calling them, emailing them, figuring out whether they offer these things. I'm just going to go somewhere that they do. So these terms can actually help with customers along the purchasing path as well.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you feel like it's easier to have your business registered in the EU or in the US or in Canada because of all of the laws and regulations that you have to do to set up these terms and conditions?
I don't think it really would matter where you're setting this up. So let's say I'm located in Taiwan. These terms may still apply to me if I'm selling in the EU, US, UK, or Canada. So it's not necessarily about where your business is set up, because the laws don't really care where your business is located. It's more about who you're selling to, where you're shipping, and things like that. So there are certain things that are set up, like in the EU, GDPR will apply if you are offering goods or services there or if you're tracking people online. So for example, let's say I have a t-shirt store and I'm not shipping to the EU. I don't have pricing in euros. I don't have an address in the EU. GDPR may not apply to me from that perspective because I'm not offering goods or services there. But let's say I do have analytics and people from the EU come and look at my website and they're tracked, GDPR would apply to me from that point of view. So you have to be really careful about these things. Like I said, like with analytics, if you don't need it, don't have it on your site because it can subject you to multiple laws. So it's not so much about where your business is set up. It's more about who you're selling to and whose data you're collecting and things like that.
I think the first thing I'm going to do after this is remove Google Analytics from my site. Who am I kidding? I don't need SEO. It's fine.
It's not that important.
Yeah, it's okay. Because I most definitely do not have all of this covered.
So I was a little bit curious and I went to the Termageddon website. I was like, well, I'm curious what you have hung on there as far. And there's at the bottom of your website, you have the, you know, Termageddon LLC, you know, like, you know, the copyright there, and we have privacy policy, terms and conditions, disclaimer, affiliate terms and conditions, and then the cookie policy. That's a lot. Would you recommend, is that like most websites should at the bottom and the footer have all of those things?
So we're a little bit different in the sense that, for example, we have affiliates. So we have web designers who resell or refer their clients to us. So if you're not doing that, you wouldn't need the affiliate terms and conditions, right? For the disclaimer, we have the disclaimer that we're not offering legal advice because we want to make sure that people know that. So unless you're providing information that could be seen as legal advice, but it's not, you're participating in affiliate programs, you're offering health or fitness tips, or you're displaying third-party ads on the website, you probably don't need the disclaimer either. So we're a little bit unique as a business in the sense of we have all these policies just because of the way that we do business. But when it comes to regular businesses, usually, you know, if you're collecting personal information, you will want to have a privacy policy. If you have cookies on the site, you'll want to have a cookie policy. And then if you want to limit your liability in damages, or if you have e-commerce, you're going to want to have the terms and conditions. So those are kind of the main things in terms of policies that we do recommend businesses have. The disclaimer is only if you have certain features on the website. And then the affiliate terms and conditions is only if you yourself have an affiliate program, which wouldn't apply to most businesses.
Got it. And one thing I noticed is that on the site, there's this little like fingerprint logo, and you can click on that. It looks like at any time and kind of see what the privacy settings are.
Yeah.
Is that something that Termageddon does, or what is that about?
Yeah. So that tells me that you've been on our website before. What happens is when you initially visit the website, it shows you a cookie consent banner. So this is where you can either accept or decline certain cookies. Once you accept or decline, you have the right to change your settings at any time. What the fingerprint icon does is it pulls up the cookie consent banner again, and it allows you to change your settings. So let's say you accepted cookies before, but now you want to decline them. You just click on that fingerprint and withdraw your consent, and then you will no longer be tracked by those cookies. So that is actually provided by us through an integration with a German company called UserCentrics, because they don't transfer data to the US. It's a whole mess with that. I probably won't get into it. But that is provided. You can create that with Termageddon through your Termageddon account too.
Very cool.
Okay. Would you say that all of these terms and conditions is like a one and done, or is there some housekeeping that you should keep up with?
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not one and done. It's what comprises most of my work. So there are two ways in which these policies change. So the first change would happen when you change your business practices. So let's say I initially collected names and emails, and I'm choosing to collect physical addresses to send clients gifts. Now, I would want to update my policy to say that I'm collecting physical addresses as well now. Or let's say I didn't share data, but now I do. I want to make that update. Or I didn't offer refunds before, but now I do. I want to make that update. So that's the first change that takes place. And the second change is legislation. So we have all these new privacy laws getting passed and going into effect. So, for example, next year, we have 8 new laws that go into effect that would all affect privacy policy disclosures. So when those changes take place, that's when you want to change things too. And then lastly, you have rules, guidance, and enforcement actions. So those can actually interpret privacy law requirements. So let's say a privacy law is passed, and they love doing this in the United States, which is where they pass kind of a half-baked privacy law as fast as they can, while they can. And then they issue rules and guidance. And these rules and guidance interpret how to comply with the law. So let's say the law initially says, I need 5 privacy policy disclosures. The guidance may say, oh, you might actually need these other 10 as well. So that's where updates are added as well in terms of adding new things for those rules, guidance, regulation, and all these other things.
Yeah. Aye. So
wow.
With all of these like regulations to follow, like what are some ways that like a small business, like this t-shirt business or this broccoli business, I don't know, can they automate some of this? Can they use Termageddon without having to like have a full legal team to keep up with this? Or is it just like you have to put a reminder and check in with this every year?
Yeah, so that's what we do. It's literally my job to track and keep things up to date. It's definitely a full-time job. I mean, there's a couple different ways to do it. So one is hiring a privacy lawyer who can do this for you, can be pretty expensive. Or two, you can sign up with a service like Termageddon, which we track and make updates for you. So we will actually send you an email before new laws go into effect. You may have to answer some new questions or something like that. But once you do, we will automatically update your policies for you to comply with that new legislation. And if you want to kind of learn more about this, on our blog, we have privacy bill trackers. So those list all of the currently proposed privacy bills in the United States and around the world as well that you can look at, see what's coming up. We also have posts on what's coming up in the next few years, like what laws are going into effect in 2025, 2026. And we also have compliance guides for each law. So let's say Delaware passes a new privacy law and you don't want to read it. We do have a compliance guide that talks about the main points of the law and what you need to do to comply with it as well.
Kudos to that guy.
So my favorite page on your website is the Term of Jargon page. That is so brilliant. All of these, because you're throwing at these terms and these different things that we don't deal with in our everyday lives. Like, I think I know what that means. I've heard it before. And I really like that you lay out this very complex thing. It's this, it feels like when I'm thinking about all of this, these legal issues for my website, that it's just like this really like something that's really hot. And that you just have the term again, like the oven mitts, sort of a carry that's like really hot things. Like, all right, it's still scary, but you're going to have these oven mitts that are going to keep you safe and you're not going to get burned. Is that kind of a good way to think of what you're doing?
I like how you're thinking about it as a hot oven because I think about it as kind of a rat's nest.
Okay. Because I don't want to get burned though.
It's very confusing and there's a lot going on and there's a lot changing. And even with the American Bar Association, we see attorneys having a hard time keeping up with all this stuff. And even attorneys who work in privacy, like this is their entire job. It's hard to keep up with all of this. It really is. But what we try to do is we try to simplify it and kind of break it down into the main parts that you need to know so that you don't panic. Because when you look at this and you see, okay, I need to do like 50,000 things, what do I start on first? It can be overwhelming and scary. And we try to not make it that way. So what our service does is we ask you a series of questions. So the first set of questions will actually help the software figure out what laws apply to you and what disclosures your policies need to have, whether you need to have a cookie consent banner, what type of banner you need to have, and all of this other fun stuff. And then the remainder of the questions are used to create the disclosures in your policy. So you'll be asked questions like, do you sell data or do you share it? And if you don't know what these things are, like, for example, a lot of businesses think they don't share data. But let's say you have an email marketing list on MailChimp, you're sharing data with MailChimp, right? Or you have analytics, you're sharing data with the analytics company. We do have videos on how to answer each question. And we also have help articles next to each question where you can read about what the question means. And we always get on calls with customers and explain things to them and help them get set up. So we do try to make this terrible situation a little bit better for everyone. And with a name like Termageddon, you also have to have some fun with it too.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
How did you guys come up with that name? On a side note, that's such a good name.
We were on a car ride with my husband's cousin going back home from like Thanksgiving or something. We're like, okay, we have this business idea. Can you help us come up with a name? And we initially thought about Terminator, but obviously that domain was taken. So we landed on Termageddon because we're like, we had to make this kind of fun, you know, because otherwise it's just going to be miserable for everyone involved.
Solid. I love it.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. So would you trust any of the free policy or privacy law generators or AI?
Oh, grab it from Google.
Like, just like chuck it in AI. Here's my URL. Can you make me a terms and conditions? Like,
or copy and paste from somebody else's website. I'll just take theirs.
Oh, yeah. Or that. Yeah. Can you do that?
Yeah. So I've tried all of those, actually, just for fun, because that's what I do for fun. So the first one is, let's talk about AI, right? It's very tempting going to ChatGPT and say, hey, create me a privacy policy. Well, I did that test. So I did it in three parts, actually. So the first part was, here's the URL, create a privacy policy. And it was just random information. So it's not based on the laws that apply to me. So it's just random disclosures. It was saying things that I was sharing data with fraud prevention vendors where I really wasn't, or I was selling data where I really wasn't, or these are the rights that I offer. And they were all just like random, right? Then I gave it like more information about my business practices, but the information in the policy was still written, right? So the key to having a good privacy policy is knowing which privacy laws apply to you, because that's what dictates the disclosures within your privacy policy. So if I miss any of those disclosures, my privacy policy is not compliant. Well, after playing around with it for a couple hours, I was able to get it to generate a compliant privacy policy. But what I had to do is I had to tell it all the disclosures that I needed to have, tell it all the privacy laws that applied to me, and then tell it all of my business practices. So in reality, like if you're a layperson, how are you going to know what disclosures your privacy policy needs to contain? You don't. So that's the only way I could get it to generate a compliant privacy policy. And then it wouldn't update the policy for me. So for example, the California Consumer Privacy Act was amended by the California Privacy Rights Act. Well, it didn't know that because the AI was not updated for that. Right. So the updating portion doesn't work either. In terms of the free privacy policy generators, the first thing that I would want to say is that most of them actually aren't free. So when you go to generate your policy, it'll ask you, hey, do you want GDPR disclosures? And you say, yes. Oh, boom, $20. Oh, are you creating these for a business? Yeah. Oh, $50. You know, and everywhere you're just upcharged. So you actually end up paying like $400, $500 for this, even though you were initially signing up for a free service. The policies that are created through those free generators are actually templates in the sense that it's a static document and they just fill in like, here's my business name, here's my business address, or here's my email to contact me. So it's actually a static document that's not based, again, on any privacy laws, and it also doesn't fit my business practices. So the second standard within privacy policies is that they must accurately disclose your business and privacy practices. So if you're sharing data and your policy says that you're not, that's a non-compliant policy. So that was the issue with that. And they also don't update. In terms of copying and pasting somebody else's privacy policy, first of all, copyright infringement. Second of all, you don't know whether they need to comply with all the same privacy laws that you do. Second, even if, let's say, by some miracle they do, you don't know whether it has all the correct disclosures because they might have pulled a template or copied it from somebody else as well. And then you have to make all these edits to fit your actual privacy practices. And then also you'd have to go to their website like every day to see if they've updated for new laws and count on them to update it. It just doesn't make sense. It's so time consuming. Whereas in reality, you're going to be spending like at least a week editing these policies versus just getting the right privacy policy to begin with.
So at what point, you have a super simple website, you probably don't need Termageddon, you think it's pretty simple. Or like, is there like a thing where you say, yeah, at this point, this is who we're a best fit for. Once your website starts doing these types of things, is there something where like, no, you're good, you're probably all right. At what point would you recommend someone either hiring a lawyer or starting up with Termageddon?
So I would say there's a couple things about this. So let's say I have a personal website that nobody goes on to where I just list the birthdays of my family members and it's a calendar for me to remember that. It's not a visible site to anyone else. It's just purely personal. Probably not something that you need to worry about, right? Or something that's internal, like we have a site for our employees to order Termageddon swag, right? It's an internal site. They know our privacy practices because it's in their employee handbook. It's not something that we really need to think about that much because it's not accessible to anybody outside of our team. On the other hand, the moment at which you want to start thinking about privacy is the moment at which you're collecting personal information from the public. So if you have contact forms, analytics, email newsletter signups, that's when you need to start thinking about this. And whether it's thinking about it in the sense of hiring a lawyer, using a third-party service, trying to write something up yourself, you know, obviously it's up to you of what you're comfortable with, what your legal risks are, but you really want to think about this when you're collecting personal information. So it doesn't really matter whether the site is really small. I just recently read a lawsuit about a one-person company in California offering goods to the military, to military members, right? It's like patches and stuff, right? Who would ever go after a website like that? It's one person, maybe they sell 100 patches a year. It's not a big deal. Well, they were just sued under the California Invasion of Privacy Act. So it's really unfair in the sense of what some of these lawyers are doing. So basically what they have is they have a set of five people from California just visiting websites and getting tracked and suing them. They somehow pull a list of all the websites that have analytics or Facebook pixel on them and then go to those websites, get tracked, and file lawsuits. So it's really not fair as to what's happening, but this is just to illustrate the fact that you don't have to be a big business for this to apply to you. You don't have to have employees. You don't have to have a ton of revenue. You don't have to collect a ton of data. It's just the collection of data and tracking people is what's putting you at risk.
Got it. So essentially, if you're collecting data from people, if you want someone to interact with your website, you need to get this figured out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
All right.
Do you see like the privacy laws evolving much in the next few years or ever? Like, do you think one day we'll have a universal privacy policy?
So the laws do evolve a lot. So a lot of the older laws are getting amended. So, for example, Australia Privacy Act of 1988, a law that was passed in 1988 that deals with privacy. It's been amended several times, but they're actually going through amendment process right now. And that's because of the drastic change in technology. In the US, we see certain trends like allowing consumers to opt out of sales of their personal information. That's a really big trend right now where that's very popular in terms of privacy laws providing that right. And I think as time goes on, those rights evolve. So an amendment was passed to allow people to opt out of the sharing of their personal information for targeted advertising. So as privacy concerns differ, right? So back in the day, you were worried somebody was going to sell your Blockbuster video watching records or eavesdrop on your landline phone. As technology evolves, so do laws. And we actually see some laws being, older laws being adapted to newer technologies as well. Now, in terms of a global standard for privacy, I think that's going to be a really, really tough sell. So, for example, in the U.S., they've been trying to pass a comprehensive federal law for 5 years now, and it's going nowhere. You know, this time, this legislative session is ending and it's not happening now. Who knows if it's going to happen in the next session? So if you think about how difficult it is to come to agreement within the U.S. itself, how difficult it would be to come up with an agreement within the entire world. We do see a lot of countries adapt other privacy laws. So, for example, in Asia, GDPR is being adapted, but it is changing to their cultural perceptions of what privacy means to them. So there are differences, but there are some countries that are working on a similar standard, especially because they want to get an adequacy decision and allow the transfer data to the EU and doing business in the EU and collecting their data. You do kind of want a similar standard in place, but they're definitely not the same.
Got it. So we're not getting this all solved tomorrow. It's forever.
No, I wish, but no.
But thank you so much for sharing all this information. I feel like I understand this a lot better. I know a little bit more of the risks and things I have. And for people who are like, oh, shoot, I need to get in touch with Termageddon. I need to find out more. How do people get in touch with you? Where can you be found on these great interwebs?
Sure. So you can find our website at termageddon.com, termageddon.com. Also on social media under the same name. And then you can also email me. My email is Donata, D-O-N-A-T-A, at termageddon.com.
Awesome, Donata. Now, you guys go to some of the WordCamps and things like that. So if people want to end up catching you guys in person.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were just at WordCamp US in Portland, and we have a couple more upcoming WordCamps as well. So if you're there, definitely come see us.
I definitely went from terrified, well, super excited to talk to you. Then at the beginning, I was like, oh my God, I screwed up already. And then now I'm like, nope, Termageddon just has a new client because this is too much for Emma to handle. But I am a lot less scared. Like, I'm not nervous about it. Yeah. So it worked with me.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being on our Woo Biz Chat here on Do the Woo. And we thank you for your time. And for you, dear listener, thank you for joining us for another episode of WooBiz Chat. We are here, and go look back at some of our past episodes. Make sure you subscribe and all that type of thing. Bob is always talking on social media, so interact there. If you have questions, you can definitely find us on LinkedIn or those different places. Find us in Slack somewhere. Send us a message. We love to include you in these conversations. And until next time, thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone.